Next case for argument is 20-1842, Seneca v. MSPB. Mr. Chappabitty, we're ready when you are. Please proceed.
Okay. May it please the court. The petitioner's appeal seeks to criticize an order by an administrative judge, Dunnefield, for lack of jurisdiction, and in the process, he did not weigh or balance what was before him and what the petitioner Seneca had placed before him for consideration to show that, yes, indeed, he did have jurisdiction over his initial appeal, and he should have made a more full decision supporting his lack of jurisdiction situation. And what we want to do, Mr. Seneca, respectfully request from this honorable court a decision to reverse and remand the Dunnefield July 26, 2016 final decision for lack of jurisdiction back to the lower level so that he can engage in discovery and argue at a hearing why the MSPB has full jurisdiction in this matter. Should a remand be deemed appropriate?
This is Judge Prost. Is your position that they were just wrong on the law or on the facts? Is this an appealable non-selection, that this is a suitability determination? And on what basis do you make that? I mean, we've got as a given the 2008 regulation. And that suggests that one-off selections do not constitute the courts aren't going to recognize a constructive eligibility determination. So how is your case different than one of those?
Yes, Judge. If you take a look at the extensive timeline that the petitioner had prepared, it begins in September 2015, and he did numerous conversations, numerous meetings, numerous disclosures to the NIH, and in anticipation of getting a full position with them. Now, one of the things that's confusing here is that Dean Seneca marked the negative suitability determination in his initial appeal form that was dated April 1, 2016. What has happened here is the agency and the judge, initially Judge Dunnefield, erred and they went way off the situation and did not apply the correct law, or they misapplied the law that gave them the basis to say, oh, this is just a tentative offer. Well, that ignored a March 3rd 2016 letter from the
I'm not debating whether it was a tentative or a final offer. The question before us is whether or not this is an appealable non-selection. And that's based on whether it was not just a one-off constructive suitability determination, but a real suitability determination is defined by the regulations. So how do you draw that distinction there?
Well, let's take a look at the core matter that confronted Mr. Seneca back in 2016. And that was that, that certain information came forward into the hands of Ms. Becker, and she wrote him a letter saying, I have information that shows that this was not a competitive promotion, but that it was a tentative offer. Now, she's totally wrong in that regard. Now, let's explain why. Well, first of all...
Can you assume for purposes of current discussion that it doesn't make any difference whether this was a tentative offer or not? Just assume that. I know you disagree with it. Make your argument on the assumption that it doesn't matter whether it was a non-tentative offer. It was a rescission of a definite promotion. Why then do you still prevail? Or are you saying you don't prevail unless we were to conclude that, go on.
Okay, well, what we want to emphasize here to the panel is that the information document that was used by the agency in this Becker to withdraw the so-called tentative offer was in and of itself a suitability determination, of patently a very provable suitability determination because of what it had in it that caused him to be derailed in getting further and going
Mr.
on the job.
Chappabitty, this is Judge Stoll. I hear what you're saying. You're saying there was that decision, which we've all read, is a non-suitability determination. But we have a regulation that says a non-selection or cancellation of eligibility for a specific position based on an objection to an eligible or passover of a preference eligible is not a suitability action. Is not, even if it's based on the same reasons that are considered for suitability. So that's the trouble we're having here. You have a communication that says that he is not going to be given a particular position, and it says even in that circumstance that we cannot consider it a suitability determination. So how do you respond to that specifically?
Well, the proximate cause for that so-called withdrawal by the agency was something that he has never had an opportunity to look at. Now, one of the arguments we made early on was that the administrative judge should have allowed him to get the document in discovery process and to take that information and review it and argue it at a hearing before the administrative judge to see if it was indeed an appealable suitability determination or whether it was beyond the jurisdiction.
But even, I have a question for you, Mr. Chappabitty. I hear what you're saying. I think that let's assume you were given that discovery. I'm having a hard time imagining what you could possibly get that would overcome this regulation. Because this was a determination based for a specific position only. You agree with that, right?
Yes, but it was confirmed. It was a confirmed position.
But it's for a specific position. Do you agree that the letter was involving a specific position?
It was a letter confirming him to the position that he was supposed to get in on May the 3rd.
So that's a specific position, right? Is that a specific position?
Yes, it was a specific position for Tribal Health Resource Officer. And what he did is he went forward, and then the information document came up and came in and, in effect, caused him not to be able to get his confirmed position. What's happening here is the agency and the administrative judge are mixing up and they're trying to muddle up what the meaning of a confirmed position and versus a tentative selection. Now, we're saying that it was a confirmed position and there's no doubt about it. The facts, the evidence, and the manner in which the agency acted for months and months and months, including
I know Judge Toronto has called this too. Let's assume that it was a confirmed position. I don't think the agency is resting on, well, if it's a confirmed position, it's a reviewable non-suitability determination. I think whether it's confirmed or not confirmed, you're still in the question that Judge Stoll raised, which this was a non-selection for a particular position. Right?
Well, somewhat, but let me go ahead and respond a little bit more. A non-suitability, is it an appealable suitability determination? Yes, and we believe that is because the information, had it been divulged to him, would have uncovered the substance of what was alleged against him to show that he was not, that he could not go into the position because it would harm the agency's functioning, it would harm the agency's duty to the tribes out there, and therefore they said, you can't do this. They said, well, show me what it is. I want to see it, Judge Dunnefield. I want to see the details and substance of what it was that was put in my way to prevent me from going forward with all the assurances that everyone had given me, even way back in February 25th and 26th, when the deputy director and the director, Francis Collins and Jim Anderson, went before a national group of tribal leaders and publicly announced that Dean would be taking the position that's it, that is an issue here. And that it took place
Mr. Chapa, can I ask you this question? So the regulation 731.203B, that's the one that we've been talking about so far, a non-selection, blah, 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 for a specific position is not a suitability action. Before you get to B, don't you have to qualify under A, which says, for purposes of this part, suitability action is one or more of the following: cancellation of eligibility, removal, cancellation of reinstatement eligibility, and debarment. Which is this case in your view? Or is that not an exhaustive list?
Well, if we had the information and had an opportunity to go get it, review it, then we would come up and probably say it was number one or A there, which was what you just stated. Now, this is the whole crux of the problem here with the petitioner and having him file his initial petition with the MSPB and then filing this petition with the Federal Circuit Court, is that he never had the opportunity to fully argue that, yes, it is within the regulations. Yes, whatever it was that the information consisted of should have triggered further action by the agency, and we have argued this in detail in the briefs. It should have triggered their responsibility, legal responsibility, to give him notice and give him an opportunity to come forward and exercise his right to due process to be able to respond and come back and say, that doesn't make any difference, I'm still qualified, and if you're not going to find me suitable, then I'm going to have to take this further up within the jurisdiction of the MSPB. What he did, the door shut on him in the process of him trying to find out more details about what it was that was a proximate cause for the agency to shut the door on him going forward with the confirmed job on May the 3rd. So the issue is, we believe that had we had discovery, that we could have proven by a preponderance of the evidence and by non-frivolous argument that, yes, this is a appealable suitability determination. As I mentioned, he did check the negative suitability determination on the initial box in his initial MSPB petition filing. So the box tells me, very openly, it tells him that, yes, he was appealing a negative suitability determination. Now, how can we say that? We can say it because what information was received did indeed constitute a suitability issue that focused on his ability to go forward and represent the NIH in the job that he was confirmed and selected for.
Okay, you're now, well into your rebuttal. Would you like to save it and let's hear from the government? We'll save the remainder of your time for rebuttal. So, okay?
I'd like to hear.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll turn to the two advocates for the government now.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Deanna Schaubacher, representing MSPB in this appeal. MSPB's jurisdiction to review suitability actions derives from OPM's regulations. And as you have mentioned, these regulations are explicit that a non-selection for a specific position simply cannot constitute an appealable suitability action within our jurisdiction, even if it is based on suitability criteria.
Can I just ask on that? That provision, 203B, has a placement of a comma after non-selection, which suggests that the reference to for a specific position is not really attached to the phrase non-selection.
Yes, I believe that there's another comma after Passover as well.
Right, so there's a non-selection comma and then a long phrase starting or,
yes.
And those two phrases talk about actual eligibility rules.
Okay, you're correct, yes.
So does this regulation say a non-selection is not a suitability action even if it is based on reasons set forth in
yes, you're correct.
And why is that attached to a specific position?
I'm sorry, I don't...
So any non-selection can never be a suitability determination. Is that what that regulation
says? Yes. I believe this section is a little bit confusing, talking about the cancellation of eligibility based on an objection or a Passover. But I do believe you're correct that the commas do set off the specific position, so a non-selection would never be a suitability action.
Can I ask you, is the term non-selection, what does that mean? Is it non-selection for a specific position? Is it defined somewhere?
It's not defined, but I do believe it would necessarily refer to a specific position because you wouldn't just be non-selected in general. So I think it's kind of inherent in the term that it's for a position that you have applied for. And there are several cases, including this court's decision in Ritchie v. MSPB, in which the court construed the rescission of a job offer as a non-selection. That also happened in Solis v. MSPB and in a board's decision, Kazan. So I believe that a rescission of a job offer is...
Is your position that even irrespective of 203B, that is this thing that was added in 2009, effective in 2008, that this would not, what happened here would not qualify as a suitability action under 203A?
Correct. It doesn't qualify as one of the covered
classes. Why was it not I assume the whole focus here is on the first one, cancellation of eligibility. Why is this not that, putting aside the non-selection subsection that comes next?
Right. If the agency had intended to cancel his eligibility, it might have done so on the basis of an objection to an eligible, which would allow it to pass over Mr. Seneca if he was one of the top qualified candidates and select someone else. Mr. Seneca has never alleged that the agency selected anyone else for this position.
What does it mean to cancel eligibility that is different from... I think you just understand something that at least I do not understand. What does it mean to cancel eligibility that's different from, I don't think you'd be a good fit for this job, so I'm canceling your promotion?
That's a great question. I believe that generally at least when it is a suitability action, the cancellation of eligibility is for more than one position. It's a broad action across a number of certificates of eligibility.
How do we know that? My mind was turning to that possibility that it has to do with a scope of the negative judgment. It has to be more than for this position today.
Yes.
Where do I find that notion of scope? Because when I look at some of the definitions in the suitability regulations, I forget where it is, in the definitions, they seem like they would cover something whose scope is no broader than the particular job.
Yes, I understand that. I believe that a cancellation of eligibility, as far as my understanding, there would really be no reason to cancel eligibility unless the agency wanted to select someone further down on the list of eligibles. They could simply not select this individual or any individual from the certificate of eligibles and either not fill the position or fill it later. So the I would agree that the regulations are fairly confusing regarding what is a cancellation of eligibility, but the case law has interpreted these two sections, A and B, to require that in order to have an appealable suitability action, the agency must have canceled eligibility across several, more than one certificate of eligibles.
I'm getting more confused rather than less confused, and it's probably my fault, not yours. But if you're saying to make it a reviewable or an appealable suitability determination, they have to have said to this applicant, we're not giving you this position, and you are not suitable for every other position in NIH? Is that kind
right.
of what you said?
Yes. So a suitability determination on its own is not appealable. There must be this suitability action on the basis of a suitability determination. And in order to cancel his eligibility broadly across a number of positions in order to constitute a suitability action, the agency would have given him notice, or there would have been some allegation that he was precluded from applying.
And you're saying that would be appealable, right?
If the agency had broadly canceled his eligibility, yes.
So I'm confused about is it Ritchie? Do you pronounce it? The case that your side is relying on. Because I thought I understood the distinction, but in Ritchie, they did do that. Or at least they said that they've got this derogatory information. This was for an ICE position. And has revealed derogatory information, which is serious enough to warrant a proposal that she be found unsuitable for this criminal investigation position and possibly denied examination for an appointment to all positions in ICE.
Yes.
So if this was not and possibly denied examination, but they said you're denied examination for all other ICE positions, would that be an appealable suitability determination?
That would be. I believe in Ritchie, they provided notice that they were proposing to debar the petitioner from further employment, but in the end, they didn't take that action, so it was still not.
Okay, but that's the kind of action then that you're differentiating between this, because
yes.
they said, not only are we not picking you for this one position, but we're foreclosing you from being eligible for every similar position?
Yes, I think a debarment is forward-looking, so debarring you from future opportunities, and a cancellation would be saying you're not eligible for any of these positions that you've already applied for and you're on the certificate of eligibles for. So it'd be canceling the...
They did neither of those in this
No,
case.
They didn't. They didn't take any broad action. They simply did not select him for this one particular
position.
But
you see the frustration and the sort of harshness this appears, at least with respect to the denial of discovery here, because the government has complete control. So what if the basis for their denying him this position was something that we know is a practical matter, this is going to be in his personnel file, and he's never going to be selected for any GS-15 position at NIH. So as a practical matter, if you knew what the information was, it could be self-evident that this would apply as a debarment for future stuff. But he's never going to know that.
No. The subsequent to the 2008 revisions to the OPM regulations, the board is precluded from considering any kind of de facto suitability action or constructive suitability action. That the effect of this information forward-looking cannot be considered in assessing the board's
jurisdiction. So the government can effectively, though, preclude any review of any of its suitability determinations by doing them each as a one-off as opposed to a generic suitability, right? I mean, there's a way that the government, if it were inclined to say, we just don't want to have to review any of these non-selections, the government could avoid that by making a one-off, one-on-one determination that's essentially the same thing, right?
I believe that's correct under the revised regulations, yes.
It's kind of troubling, is it not?
Unfortunately, the board is constrained by OPM's regulations that provide...
Were the regulations ever challenged?
Not as far as I know. The board previously, before the 2008 revisions to the regulations, did exercise jurisdiction over things that looked like,
right,
you know, constructive suitability actions. But OPM amended those regulations explicitly to stop the board from doing just that. And they're very explicit that the board must look to what the agency actually did, what the agency said it did, and not any potential possible future consequences of the agency's action.
Can I just add, when this is just a general question, I was a bureaucrat for a lot of years, so I should maybe know this, but is the basis for his non-selection, does that remain in any kind of a folder or a file so that if he applies for the next job, that automatically pops up?
I wouldn't think so, but again, we don't, MSPB does not know what that information was, how formal it was, if it was just a communication. It's not in the record. We don't know what it was.
And there's still the ability to challenge non-selections for discriminatory reasons or that sort of thing, right?
Sure. Through the EEOC, you could challenge a non-selection on the basis of discrimination. Before the board, a non-selection could be appealed based on whistleblower reprisal or a violation of VIOA or USERRA, but simply not a standalone non-selection or a non-selection based on suitability criteria.
In I forget whether it's your brief or the Justice Department's brief, there's a discussion of a due process claim here. It was a little unclear to me whether there is agreement or dispute about whether we need to say anything about the due process claim if we conclude that there was no board jurisdiction under the suitability regulations.
Absent board jurisdiction, we're precluded from considering these other claims regarding any of the agency's actions.
You know, is this a disputed point?
I'm not sure. I don't believe it's between the intervener and respondent.
Well, there are three parties. Anybody, is anybody arguing? Because I thought, I'm not sure what I'm remembering. Maybe it was the government's brief. Maybe it was the AJ's decision that seemed to just address the due process on the merits without ever saying, you don't have to reach this, or we don't have to reach this, or we don't have to consider this if there's no board jurisdiction.
Do you remember if it was the due process regarding the agency's action or due process before the board?
I don't know. Wasn't it the last argument in the government? We can ask the government.
Okay. Yeah, sure. I believe that he raised some arguments regarding his denial of discovery, but the MSPB's position is that the administrative judge acted within his discretion to stay discovery deadlines pending a decision on jurisdiction absent a non-frivolous allegation of board jurisdiction. Accepting Mr. Seneca's arguments as true, there still would not be board jurisdiction because there was no suitability action. If there's no further questions, thank you. We respectfully request that you affirm the board's decision.
May it please the court. I'll begin by saying we agree with everything that, that Ms. Schaubacher said and agree that affirming the MSPB's decision is the appropriate outcome here. I'll address Judge Toronto's question at the outset and say our position is that the court does not need to address any due process arguments if it concludes that the board doesn't have jurisdiction. I'm not sure if Mr. Seneca disagrees with that. I'm happy to address any other questions the panel might have. If the panel...
Is there a technical answer to the question what a eligibility cancellation is?
There's nothing more precise in the regulations that I'm aware of. What I can say in this instance, as is clear from Mr. Seneca's chronology at Supplemental Appendix 87, the agency re-advertised the position. They didn't select Mr. Seneca. They didn't pick anybody else either. They re-advertised the position. So there's no need to cancel eligibility in that instance. The agency always has the authority to not pick anybody from the list of eligibles that they receive from HR. More generally, as the MSPB noted, there is a distinction between cancellation of eligibility for a specific position, which generally arises in the case of an objection to an eligible or a passover of a preference eligible. And that's a situation where there's a higher rated person A and a lower rated person B, and the agency wants to pick the lower rated person B over person A, the hiring official can cancel the eligibility of person A by objecting to their eligibility. And there are various factors they can consider which are set forth in a handbook prepared by OPM. So that's the situation where eligibility for specific position is canceled.
But not reviewable.
That would not be reviewable right under the regulations.
How do you define non-selection?
I think generally it's non-selection for a specific position is our understanding. I'm sorry.
How do we know that it's non-selection for a specific
position? There's case law that talk about non-selection generally being not appealable, but I'm not aware of any.
But saying it's for a specific position.
That's generally how non-selection works in our understanding, as the cases use that term and as the regulation uses that term. But just if I could briefly finish the point, because I see my time has expired. There is the more general cancellation of eligibility for a number of different positions, all the positions that the applicant has applied for. We see that, again, in response to Judge Toronto's question, I'm not aware of any specific regulation that talks about when that happens, but there are MSPB decisions that have referred to OPM canceling eligibility for different for all open positions. So
can I just add, and it wasn't your time because I think you were still running off your friend's clock. So I think you start off with another 5 minutes. Am I correct on that?
I continued running on the same clock.
Oh, okay. Well, you've got time.
Thank you.
Maybe I'm a little confused. Is there a difference in terms of what we're talking about if they had selected just when they withdrew his offer or whatever, they just selected number two person on the list versus canceling the whole advertisement and re-advertising it again? Does that have anything to do with anything that we're talking about here?
Well, so in terms of whether there was a suitability action taken, which is the question this court's deciding, no, it has nothing to do.
Right.
I was trying to address the more general issues by addressing specific questions. But right, that has nothing to do with it.
And he talks about the box was checked. You're not suitable. But they still kept the box after the 2008 regulation, right?
It seems
even
like
though
it,
there's
yes.
some source of confusion then.
It seems like it, yes. But we agree that suitability determination by itself is not appealable. There has to be a suitability action. And the
so how would he know if he's not allowed discovery? How would he even know whether or not what happened to him and what was done to him passes the threshold?
Well,
I mean, there could be something in his file that says we've discovered that he's guilty of some heinous crime, and we can't select him for this parens, and we know he can't be selected for any other position. How do we know that's not in his file?
There are procedural requirements that both the agency and OPM, depending on who takes the action, have to follow before they can take a suitability action. So if an employee is subjected to a suitability action, they have to get notice of it. And there are cases where employees get...
Right, but I'm sorry, but if the argument is that requirement was violated, then you can't use failure to fulfill the requirement to remove it from the predicate for the requirement.
If the argument, and I'm not sure he's made the argument that specifically, but if he's saying there are specific notice requirements that weren't followed here, then we would say, well, first, no, there's an affidavit from the agency saying no suitability determination was made here, and there can't be a suitability action without a suitability determination. That's at Supplemental Appendix 65. And there's also the fact that all of these suitability actions refer to either removal from a position, and Mr. Seneca, in his brief, he says he continued in federal employment in a different position until 2018. He doesn't say he was removed from that
this,
position.
This had all happened on April 15th, after the effective date of the new job, so he was in it for, you know, a week or two. Then that would be a removal, and it would be...
If he'd been appointed?
Yes.
If he'd been appointed... And then
was it the effective date April 1st or April 6th?
April 3rd was, 3rd. It was so the question would be, was he appointed on that day? Assuming he was appointed on that day and then subsequently removed, it would have to be, well, first it would have to be OPM that did that. The agency, if it's the suitability action authority that's being used, only OPM can remove employees. If OPM removed him from employment after he was appointed to that specific position, as a result of the suitability action authority, it would have had to have provided him with notice and an opportunity to respond. And in that case, yes, he would be able to challenge that.
If HHS had removed him, he would have had a 75-12.
He would have had, they could
unless
have proceeded
he's a probation.
Under, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I assume he might be a probationer, in which case.
If you were not tenured, that would be an issue. But if you were tenured, then the agency would presumably, proceed under Chapter 75 to remove him. Happy to address any other questions. If not, we ask that the MSPB's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
We will restore 2 minutes for your rebuttal time, sir.
Okay. I want to take a look at the Ricky case, and there's no doubt that the facts and circumstances that confronted Ricky and her suitability issues, that they were tentative offer. The other major point with Ricky is that she did, in fact, have an opportunity to look at the allegations, to examine what they were, and to assess them, and the court came back and ruled against her effort to try to get jurisdiction to hear her case. Now here, we have why did the NIH decide not to do a suitability investigation when the information, quote unquote, they received caused them to deem Mr. Seneca no longer qualified and therefore unsuitable? That is the crux of his due process argument, and it would be so simple for this court to say, we agree that there's some big due process issues here with the manner in which the agency did not let Mr. Seneca review and respond to the so-called information that kept him from the position that he had been confirmed to, and therefore we'd like to go back and simply order that discovery be conducted so he can in fact get an idea, he can in fact examine it, and can in fact make a decision to either look at it and say, yes, I agree with the agency, this was a non-appealable non-selection, or else he could say, I don't agree with the agency. This, from the facts of this case, it appears that this was a appealable negative suitability determination that I want to go ahead and proceed on. Now that is the threshold one, the line in the sand, so to speak, which is that the NIH decided not to do a suitability investigation so that he would not ever know what it was, the details as to why things went the way they did, not in his favor. So the point I'm stressing here is that we just want to go back and get the simplest action and decision from this court, this honorable court, that says that let's at least give him discovery. The administrative judge did not assess the arguments that Seneca made in his filings before the MSPB. They failed to look at his non-frivolous arguments, but why would they not proceed to give him the information? That was all designed and a charade to prevent him from looking at whether or not this was an appealable non-selection. So that's the crux of the matter here, is at the outset, the agency took certain actions, no doubt deliberate, well-planned, and perhaps conspiratorial, to say, okay, we're just going to kick him out on the basis of this information, and we're not going to be taking it, we're going to argue that the MSPB has no jurisdiction, period. So okay. Those are the basic points that we are forgetting about by going into all of these other conflicting, confusing.
I think we have your argument, sir. And your time has expired. So thank both sides, and the case is submitted. That concludes our proceeding for this morning.